all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, February 3rd. It's probably another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, but we are on the road today, so you're going to have to take my word for it that, once again, if you're anywhere near Chippewa County, it's a beautiful place to be. But while on the road, we went to go check out the new Civic Media studio that is under construction in downtown Green Bay, met Dr. Kristen Lyerly up there, and did not realize it was still pretty early in the construction phase. So, Aaron, I know that being a Manitowoc native, you'd love to have the opportunity to go to the City Deck landing in downtown Green Bay and do a show. Just not yet. Don't go there anytime soon. It's a lot of sawdust right now.
Yeah, sounds about right. Because, I mean, right now we're just running everything remotely. Like, we're broadcasting to Green Bay, but we're not broadcasting from Green Bay yet.
Right. Yep. And, you know, it's I think the station is still licensed to Denmark, if I'm not mistaken, the community of Denmark, not the country. You know, and it's the studio itself that is moving. And it just kind of, as I was visiting with my in-laws, we were talking about the days when basically every town, not every town, but, you know, right, you didn't have, let's use Green Bay as an example. You didn't have 12 radio stations in Green Bay. You had maybe three or four. And then, you know, one was licensed to Manitowoc, one was licensed to Denmark, and one was licensed to wherever. And, you know, radio was much more, shall we say, hyper-local back in those days. And now it's much more regional and studios move about. And we are definitely looking forward to doing some shows from there, along with, you know, Oshkosh, Wisconsin Rapids. You heard Luke, if you didn't hear Luke Mathers yesterday, Hayward is about to go online, if it hasn't already. So that's big news, and many more to come. So we would love to get to see you as we started talking about road tripping around all these things. Aaron, you didn't get a chance to price out, like, you know, mini bus rental or anything like that, did you?
No, nothing like that, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well,
I didn't know
we'll
I was supposed
soon.
To, but I can take
it. Well, you sounded so excited about it that I assumed, you know, that you would. Anyway, coming up this morning, we've talked about this once or twice, but we really can't say enough that there is this outright Orwellian plan for abortion misinformation. Republicans have introduced a bill that, if passed, would create a federal anti-abortion website that provides misleading information about abortion, directs women to so-called health centers that pressure them not to have abortions, and could even collect their personal information to share with anti-abortion groups. We will talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about that. And then in our next hour, we're going to visit with Mark Jacob for an episode we've titled Mussolini, On Time Trains, and the New York Times. Because despite the line that gets used a lot, it's actually a lie that the Italian dictator Mussolini actually made sure that the trains ran on time out of Rome, and that was justification for a fascist government. But if you said it often enough, people began to believe it. And, you know, to this day, the myth lives on. And that's the lesson to remember when you have the New York Times running with headlines praising Florida Governor Ron DeSantis for, quote, taking on the education establishment, end quote, when what he's really trying to do is erase Black history from classrooms and do so much more. So Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, we'll talk about the media coverage of this week's top stories. I think we'll also talk to UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher for some sports headlines to get us into the weekend, and perhaps your phone calls if you'd like to join us at 844-967-2789, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And you already heard Aaron Zommers there, our producer back in Madison. And now you're going to hear me again tell you there's a big primary election coming up February 21st for Wisconsin State Supreme Court and other local offices. So do make a plan, mark it on your calendar, or get an absentee ballot. You can do that by going online and going to myvote.wi.gov. Apparently, we missed one of the more exciting Milwaukee Bucks games of the season last night. The Bucks were down as much as 21 points at one point to the Los Angeles Clippers at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee before beginning a comeback. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 20 of his 54 points in the fourth quarter, and the Bucks overcame that deficit to win 106-105 for their sixth consecutive victory. Let's see, Chris Middleton had 16 points. Drew Holiday had 12 more himself. The Bucks on Saturday night will host Miami. And what did Giannis do here? He was talking about, I guess, remember in the NBA Finals, he famously went to, Chick-fil-A after he scored 50 points in a playoff game and helped the Bucks win the title. And so now that he has scored over 50 points again, he already has an idea for how to commemorate it as he reached it for the third time in the last month. Let's see. He says, quote, "Tomorrow, I think I'm going to go to Culver's. I'm going to get 50 cheeseburgers and try to eat as many as I can. The rest, I'll have my son eat them or I'll give them to my dog." Probably not the exact way that Culver's, you know, PR writers would write it, but they are damn good burgers. So whoever Giannis wants to feed them to, as long as he gets 50 for scoring 50 points, good on him.
Yeah, as far as the burgers to the dog, though, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't think it's going to get there. I've had the butter burgers, and I'm not sharing them with the dog. They're too damn good, like I said. Fair. More after this. You're up north. As Jimmy Buffett tells us about one particular harbor, we will talk about Wisconsin's harbors and keeping the infrastructure intact coming up in just a little bit. First off, the Badger men's basketball team held off Ohio State last night, 65-60. The Badgers will host Northwestern on Sunday. On Monday, we will be talking to George Penn of United to Amend as we talk about the continuing push to get an amendment to the U.S. Constitution that says something that should be so self-evident, that corporations are not people. And yet somehow, currently, through a twisted interpretation of current law, we have the ability in this country for corporations to contribute just like people can to political campaigns. And that's why they've become so expensive. And so George Penn will talk about the efforts their group is doing. It's going to take, this is a very long, multi-year effort to finally get enough support in Congress to do this and then send it out to the states and get states to ratify it. And again, even though this thing sounds so obvious, the folks who benefit the most from corporate donations are the ones who naturally are going to fight against it. So we will have that discussion come Monday. All right. There are a lot of little headlines to catch here, and then a couple of big ones that we'll get throughout the day. One of the smaller ones, but hence the bumper music, was just I wanted to offer up a reminder that when we talk about infrastructure, and we've talked about it in so many ways lately, not just roads and bridges, but broadband and, you know, water and sewer lines. And we talked with Julie Lassa earlier this week about updating the electric grid in rural Wisconsin. And we get so many press releases, every newsroom does, and can only bring you so many throughout the course of the day. And every so often, I want to pass along one that probably gets overlooked. But this one is where Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation announce a new round of work to be done for seven different harbor projects around Wisconsin. We think of all the goods that come in and out of Wisconsin, especially the stuff that goes out, the things that we make, the things that our farmers grow and what have you, things that are assembled here. And if you ask people, how do they get out of here? People, I would guess, say truck, first of all. And obviously, that's extremely important. There might be air, but we've also got, we're on two Great Lakes and, you know, and the Mississippi River. So that's, you know, that ain't bad. And the harbors that are around there, much like any other infrastructure, they're susceptible to wear and tear and age. And so the governor was announcing that the harbor assistance program would be making sure that harbor work is done at the Port of Green Bay, Port Milwaukee, La Crosse, Manitowoc, and a couple more projects in La Crosse and Green Bay. Superior certainly seen its share of work as well. And so since that came across, I thought it might be worth noting that, again, when people talk about government spending and everything else that comes along with it, that those go to places, and as a result, you have to be very careful with how you do these things. If you do what, say, Republicans want to do and just slash spending by just a tremendous percentage, what are you going to be doing with places like harbors that fall into disrepair? Are you going to be counting on the private sector to come along with that? I don't think so. But that's what we get from a group that has, honestly, to this point, is still continuing the lies of the 2020 election. And now there is newly released audio that offers a behind-the-scenes look at how former President Donald Trump's campaign team, in a pivotal battleground state of Wisconsin, they knew at the time, shortly after the election, that they had been outflanked by Democrats. They knew they lost. They knew the margin. But even in acknowledging the defeat internally, this new audio recording shows that they were quick to pivot to made-up allegations of widespread fraud. The audio is from 2 days after the election, so November 5th, 2020. And Trump, again, was continuing to lie about the legitimacy of the outcome. But even 2 days after the election, it was apparent to the folks in this Wisconsin meeting of political operatives that they had lost. They went so far as to praise Democratic turnout efforts and yet also joke about the efforts by Republicans to engage Black voters. The audio recording was obtained by the Associated Press from somebody who was in the meeting but wants to remain unidentified. Go figure. The central figure of the audio recording, his name is Andrew Iverson, and he was the head of Trump's campaign in the state. And we're going to play the clip here, but I'm going to tell it to you first because the audio is rather distant and faint. But what you're going to hear is Iverson talking about comms, meaning the communications team. Comms is going to continue to fan the flame and get the word out about Democrats trying to steal this election. We'll do whatever they need, just be on standby if there's any stunts we need to pull, Iverson said. And here's the audio version of Iverson's quote.
Comms is going to continue to fan the flame and get the word out about Democrats trying to steal this election. We'll do whatever they need our help with. Okay, so just be on standby in case there's any stunts we need to pull.
Any stunts we need to pull. That's what we're seeing for just what is accepted as normal behavior in elections these days. Iverson is still with the Republican National Committee. He is the Midwest Regional Director. He deferred any comment when the Associated Press reached out to him. In response to questions about the audio, a Trump campaign spokesperson said that they're focused on 2024. And that claiming that President Trump is leading by wide margins in poll after poll about 2024. I don't know what polls that might be. But to get back to the recording, folks knew at that point Biden was ahead of Trump by about 21,000 votes. And parts of the meeting of these Republican Trump operatives focused on packing up the campaign offices, writing final reports. Iverson is heard on tape praising the Republicans' efforts while admitting the margin of defeat. He pointed out that they had collected more votes than any other Republican in Wisconsin history, so they are very proud of themselves. But he says Democrats got 20,000 more out of us, out of Dane County, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Dane County. There's a lot that people can learn from this campaign, end quote. And then later, there was some joking about, part of the Republican effort to do outreach, such as it was, in the state's Black community. And Iverson at one point gets a laugh from the crowd about how the Trump campaign needed more Black voices. And then he says, "We ever talked to Black people before? I don't think so," he said, getting laughter from the room. So then, of course, what do you see after that? You see the Trump campaign team focusing only on the largest cities in Wisconsin, and especially the cities with the largest communities of color. And again, making it sound like there's yet another justification for, whether you want to call it white grievance, whether you want to call it rural-urban animosity. These are things that should not and would not exist if it weren't for people making up stuff about it and lying to people. And so that when their candidate loses, they're looking for an excuse rather than acknowledging that maybe they didn't win on their ideas. Maybe they didn't win from having, you know, the best candidate. Instead they're focused on these other, you know, grievances of some sort or another, which takes us to one other quick story here about a survey of students. And this is on University of Wisconsin campuses. And the survey says that students are afraid to express their views on controversial topics in class because they fear other students won't agree or that it could hurt their findings. Meanwhile, there is about a third of respondents who say they have felt pressure from an instructor to agree with a certain viewpoint. And this all really feeds into Republican talking points about whether full views can be expressed, you know, across academic campuses. But further down in the story, you note where the survey came from. It was UW Stout's Menard Center for Public Policy and Service. And folks around here know about the Menard family. John Menard, the founder of the chain, that family is a major Republican donor that founded the home improvement store chain, donated $2.5 million to the center in 2019, contributed $100,000 toward the survey. There was a UW-Madison political science professor who ran unsuccessfully for attorney general who sat on an advisory board. It's a survey that at one point got UW-Whitewater's chancellor so angry that he resigned about it, because he said that it was clear that the survey basically should not be done, that there would be, you know, political consequences if it were. And it really got away from the point of the fostering of communication that does, in fact, go on our campuses, and that this was nothing more than basically a partisan tool. But again, we see the case where if you have to simply talk about the environment rather than your ideas, that's an intentional distraction. And it gets away from, you know, why are you really engaged in public service? So how do they address this in the halls of Congress? Well, yesterday it came through kicking Congresswoman Ilhan Omar off of a committee for anti-Semitic comments that she had made a couple of years ago and had since apologized for, the same Republicans who then put on committees some of their members who actually had rhetoric threatening violence against other members of Congress. So again, you see the double standard that's at play there. So what did they end up doing yesterday? Well, they brought forward a bill, the Republicans did, to, quote, denounce socialism in all of its forms. And if you were going to go read something on Twitter or otherwise, I would recommend Illinois Democratic Congressman Sean Casten, who says, okay, do we really want to talk about capitalism and socialism? And he gets into the whole notion of people like Republicans who can't stop talking about socialism, who don't understand that a civil society basically depends on capitalism at one end, but then there are things, the allocations of resources, you know, our roads, our harbors, our schools, things like that, where you don't necessarily want to be at the whims of the private sector. And yet when government provides those services, it's called socialism. And that's not right. But again, it's a convenient talking point for Republicans who can't win on their ideas. We will talk to Kia Vakil coming up in our next segment on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. All aboard!
Oh, of all the crazy ideas that have come out of Congress so far since Republicans took over the House, we have a real doozy, one that is downright Orwellian, and it's now at the UpNorthNewsWI.com site. And we first heard about it from our national correspondent, Kia Vakil, who's out in California. So rather than talk to him at 4:30 in the morning, we talked to him at a more humane hour. And let's play back our little review of the past week. Kia, how are you this week?
I'm pretty well, Pat. How about yourself?
Great. Thank you. So glad to have you here again to help us sum up some of the events of this week. And to me, if you tried to come up with a theme for the week, the theme seems to be Republicans taking lots of action, almost none of it that was supported by American voters who thought they were going to be working on inflation and things like that. And we have an entire grab bag of things to talk about, from, you know, repealing amendments to the Constitution to taking down the COVID emergency. But I want to start with one you've been working on recently that, along with all the other things that Republicans could be working on but aren't, they're now working on. Did you tell me they'd be government-run crisis pregnancy centers?
So not quite, but what they would be is it would create a government-run website. This is a bill introduced by Republican Nancy Mace in the House and Marco Rubio in Florida. It's called the Standing with Moms Act. Basically, it would create this government-run website called life.gov, which would provide pregnant women with information and resources, but a lot of that information would be basically anti-abortion. It would have misleading information. And it would, you know, ask them for their, you know, they could put in their zip code and be given private resources in their area, which is code for crisis pregnancy centers, which, for those who don't know, are basically these facilities that advertise deceivingly as, you know, being reproductive healthcare facilities, but do not offer abortion and pretty much exist to discourage abortion.
And so by putting that through a government-run website, you would, if this were to pass, and of course it's not with President Biden in office, but if this were to go through, they're actually sponsoring a bill for a government-sanctioned misinformation site, an official one.
That is correct. And
wow.
If that isn't bad enough, there's also a measure in the bill that would require the Health and Human Services Department to create a portal on its own website separate from life.gov. And on that website, they would survey visitors to the website about where they live, their pregnancy, what the information they need. And if that user checks a box or otherwise consents to having their personal information collected, which, as we often know, is often a default measure, you know, a lot of people don't realize they're checking a box, HHS could then directly follow up with them by phone or by email and share their contact information with crisis pregnancy centers to give them quote-unquote resources.
Did not ask to live in Orwellian times like this, that this is actually being considered. And you know what it reminds me of? Reminds me that Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels has donated to a group that essentially uses, you know, electronic surveillance to monitor the cell phones of women who go near clinics that perform abortions and send advertising to those phones for things like crisis pregnancy centers. This is really something, the digital lengths to which they're willing to go to spread misinformation and curtail women's healthcare rights.
Yeah, it's wild. And, you know, Nancy Mace is considered one of the more moderate Republicans on abortion. And look, there's giving pregnant women information is not inherently bad, obviously. But you have to give them the whole scope of information. You have to give them, if they're interested in abortion, give them that information. If they're not, give them the other information. And where this gets really kind of deceptive is it's, you know, when you write private resources or private, you know, healthcare providers, if you're not allowing them to be abortion providers, what that is then is a crisis pregnancy center. And so it's really coded in the way Republicans love to do. And because it's being introduced in a way that seems kind of reasonable and moderate on its surface, it's not getting a whole lot of attention. It's not going to pass, like you said, but it's still, it's Orwellian, like you said. And we are seeing Republicans, you know, the RNC is telling Republicans to double down ahead of 2024 on abortion and go harder with their proposed bans, which, you know, seems like a recipe to lose, but they seem like they can't help themselves but targeting people's freedoms.
Exactly. And now, related in terms of healthcare, the other action we're seeing this week. Now, first, we actually saw it from the Biden administration. The Biden administration is saying they're ready to wind down the national emergencies related to COVID-19 so that there is an orderly transition into a new phase. Republicans want to bring the chaos and take down these emergencies right away. And it wasn't until I talked to Dr. Ben Weston in yesterday's Hometown Health segment that it reminded me, taking down these health emergencies, it isn't about removing, you know, like mask mandates and things that we haven't had for the longest time, but removing these emergencies actually takes opportunities away from Americans to stay healthy during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, the emergency order that, you know, Biden, I believe it's going to be May 11th. I might have the exact date wrong, but that's when it'll sort of be declared over, and Republicans have voted to want to repeal it immediately. And I mean, there's many problems with that. The biggest one being, under the emergency and during the pandemic, millions more people got Medicaid health insurance because of some tweaks to the rules and eligibility. And most of those people are going to wind up losing their Medicaid. And so that means millions of Americans will need to transition to either marketplace plans or like some other form of insurance. And that's a process that will take months to play out, because you can't just on February 1st decide, I don't know the exact number, but let's say 7 million people are without health insurance. Mm-hmm. That would be catastrophic. So a wind down that's, you know, about 3 months in the future makes a whole lot more sense than what Republicans have proposed.
Well, but again, we've seen some of the proposals, like a 30% national sales tax or something to end the debt ceiling hostage crisis. At least in my mind, the national media is getting better at saying more explicitly that Republicans are refusing to say what they would cut in exchange. They say they want cuts, but they won't say what. And at least that part of it has become more clear this week, that there's still not an actual plan from congressional Republicans.
Correct. And, you know, they are not committing to what they want to cut. And the fact is, if they want to cut spending in a substantial way, they either have to raise taxes or they have to cut Social Security and Medicare. Those are or defense. And they're not saying they want to do that. They have no real plan. And I agree, the media has gotten better about sort of taking that on and, you know, calling out the, let's say, the lack of specifics and the lack of a plan. And frankly, Democrats have also been pretty aggressive about messaging that in a way that's been effective. And, you know, Social Security and Medicare are areas where Democrats are very comfortable talking about that as opposed to some other issues. So I think it's an issue that, you know, time and time again, we see they kind of, Democrats wind up winning those arguments over Republicans because they're incredibly popular programs. And, you know, the lack of a plan, I think, has really become clear.
Well, and you helped create a graphic for Up North News this week about public sentiment on cuts to Social Security or Medicare. It was a CBS News YouGov poll, right?
Correct. And it's, I believe the number was 70% of Americans oppose cuts. And that's just one of, I don't know, half a dozen polls I've seen in the last couple of weeks about asking some version of the question, do you want cuts to Social Security and Medicare? Do you want cuts because of the debt ceiling? So people don't want it. You know, there's polls showing that a majority of Americans think the House Republicans' priorities are, you know, out of touch and wrong. So, you know, we're less than a month into this majority and they're already, you know, an absolute circus that is really just causing chaos.
Yeah, and like I said, in Arizona, Republican legislators are talking about scrapping the 17th Amendment, which allows voters to choose their U.S. senators. They're saying we should go back to the way the founding fathers wanted the legislature to pick the U.S. senators. And I can't help but note how convenient that is coming just as Arizona gets, you know, two Democratic U.S. senators.
Yeah, and a Democratic governor and pretty much Democratic state government in the executive positions. And that's because Republicans are running absolute, you know, extremist candidates. And, you know, that's in Arizona, but you look at any state and you're seeing some version of extremism. And, you know, in North Carolina, Republicans are introducing their Don't Say Gay bill again. You know, in Florida, you see Ron DeSantis literally trying to basically install East Germany like censorship and ban.
Imprisoned school librarians. Kids are crying because there's no more books in their library. It's like the Burgermeister Meisterburger in one of those Christmas specials where he bans all the toys. He's banning all the books in kids' libraries, that all books are basically guilty until proven innocent. In Tennessee, they're going after, you know, drag shows and, you know, talking about felon, making some of that a felony to take part in something like that. Meanwhile, there's now the candidates who may run for president in 2024. And look, while I'm not a big fan of talking about 2024 yet, the fact of the matter is that, well, first off, that's why I'm not leading with it. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But, you know, Nikki Haley's name is coming up, the former South Carolina governor, former UN ambassador to President Trump. And it's just people have really noticed how Trump has been rather open to Nikki Haley running, saying, well, if she wants to run, she wants to run. Whereas he's been going after, you know, Ron DeSantis, another potential candidate. It's almost like he's dismissing Nikki Haley, which, you know, that does the Republican Party really need another dose of misogyny?
No, he absolutely is. And I'm sure there's a dose of misogyny because it's Donald Trump. But I think he is, you know, Nikki Haley's not going to win the nomination. I will make that prediction today, and I will eat my shoe if she does, because Nikki Haley is running to be the nominee of a party that no longer exists. The reason he's, you know, attacking DeSantis is because he's threatened by DeSantis, because DeSantis has outmaneuvered him in terms of doing these heinous things that are really popular with the, you know, the MAGA base, the Republican base. So pretty much just anything that makes liberals cry. And so DeSantis, you know, has shown competitiveness in polls, whereas Nikki Haley is, I think, at like 1-2%. And, you know, I don't see that really changing.
And if anything, and it frankly just makes her sound even more craven, it sounds more like she's running for vice president to be somebody's nominee.
Yeah, I think that's quite possible. And I would not be surprised, you know, in the world where DeSantis somehow wins the nomination, if he chose someone like Nikki Haley. But, you know, Donald Trump, you know, he's still the favorite. I think that's something that a lot of people in our political and media climate want to forget. But until someone shows they can, you know, beat him with the base, you know, he's the favorite.
Well, I will say that of the couple of events he held about a week ago here, they were how he would have mockingly referred to them as low energy. This is not the same Donald Trump that we saw in 2015, because, you know, time does what time does. I'm not as young as I used to be either. And I don't know that fire in the belly from 2015 is going to come back. And I don't know that the Republican Party is going to play this game the same way as they did when he knocked off a very large field in 2015.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they want someone else, and it, by all indications, the vast majority of Republicans want someone else, Republican politicians, whether they'll say it publicly or not, it needs to be one or two other candidates in the field against him so that they consolidate, and that there's not, you know, Scott Walker and Ben Carson and Marco Rubio and Scott Walker. God bless Scott Walker for thinking he could be president. But,
right.
You know, unless that happens, he's the favorite.
Gia Vakil, Courier Newsroom national correspondent from L.A. It's always so good to talk to you. Have a great weekend. And thank you so much for the update.
Likewise. Thank you, Pat.
One other update from the Republican National Committee. They're now indicating that Milwaukee will be one of the sites of a Republican primary debate as part of the 2024 campaign. And while that is noteworthy, I think there's a more noteworthy story about Wisconsin elections. An audit of the voting machines has recently been completed, and the Wisconsin Elections Commission noted that it found no machine-related problems, a couple of human errors, but the machines work. They work as intended. And we'll talk more about that, I think, in our next hour. Courier Newsroom Political Editorial Director Carolyn Fidler joins us for This Day in History and Music and more next. You're up north.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die."
The melancholy mood of the nation is captured by Don McLean after The Day the Music Died, when Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the big bopper J.P. Richardson passed away in a plane crash on this day in 1959. We'll have much more upbeat musical things to talk about and this day in history next with our Friday friend, Carolyn Fidler, Courier Newsroom's political editorial director. Carolyn, how are you?
Friday friend. I love it.
Well, it's not that you're not our friend the other days of the week, but
yeah, the rest just, of it, I can't stand you, Pat.
The rest of it, you're more of an acquaintance. You know, right. We might acknowledge that we know you, but on Friday, we know we get to talk about your newsletter, all about state house action around the country. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But first, we always just enjoy kind of kicking around what this day in history meant. And in this case, here's a few notes from American history. The Territory of Illinois was created on this day in 1809, which I'm reasonably certain extended into much of Wisconsin from back in the day. Let's see, we have in 1870, the 15th Amendment to the Constitution granted voting rights to all men, regardless of race. So it was no longer just like white landowners. So what do you think, Fiddler? Good enough? Should we have just stopped right there?
Nah.
So that, again, that was 1870. At that point, Wisconsin's abortion ban was already 21 years old, and women would not get the right to vote for another 50 years after that. So when we talk about making incremental progress, that was definitely an increment. That wasn't the full amount of progress. That
yeah, had to not be done. At all.
Nope. The income tax was authorized by the 16th Amendment, ratified this day in 1913. Let's get back to the music and bring us to 1964, when there was a whole lot of Beatles on the chart, and then one other from the Beach Boys. Which, like the Beatles, you can hear like a little, you know, Bo Diddley influence, you know, a little rhythm and blues. And this, of course, is fun. But it would only get as high as number five on the charts because the Beatles held spots 1, 2, 3, and 4 on this day in 1964, which, Carolyn, I couldn't even imagine until that new Taylor Swift album came out and she had like the entire top 10.
Right. The Beatles of our time. The Beatles of our time.
the Beatle of our time. Yeah, that could be. But you know, I've said before that the kids back then, the kids and their rock and roll music, they had to go to the record store and actually buy those records for it to be on the charts. And downloading is so much easier now. And not that I can tell you that I have not waited until midnight to download somebody's entire album, but maybe you have.
Oh, I definitely have.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, since the Grammys are this weekend, let me ask, what have been some of your most recent favorite tunes, albums, artists that you've downloaded?
Well, I wouldn't say super recent, but like the last time I stayed up for midnight for anything, either to go out and buy an album or download it, was U2.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I looked at the Grammy list and we talked about it a little bit the other day. And I mean, there's only so many ways you can tell people you're old when you don't know, you know, this artist or that artist in the Grammy list. You know, others I do. And I'm still going to watch and go, you know, I really should listen to some of this younger stuff a little bit more often. But instead, I'm stuck in the 70s like the Village People here in 1979. Here Come the Village People from 1979. There we go. Sometimes I can't get the record on the turntable just in time. Young man, there's no need to feel down. Okay, yes or no, Carolyn? YMCA was a number one hit for the Village People.
No.
No, see, yeah, see, you right away caught the trick question. It peaked at number two for 3 weeks because a couple of other disco hits held the number one spot, including La Freak and Rod Stewart's Do You Think I'm Sexy? Yeah. Which, again, we demonstrated why 1979 will not be remembered as music's greatest year. And yet, could they have imagined the YMCA still living on to this day, you know, during... you know, breaks in sports events and things like that. I mean,
I hope they're still getting paid a lot of money.
I hope so too. Let's see. 1979, the Blues Brothers hit number one, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, number one album with Briefcase Full of Blues. And of course, there's a lot of great music in the Blues Brothers. Here's Dan Aykroyd doing Rubber Biscuit. I don't know why more people don't try to lip sync that one. Apparently, you need a little bit of talent to do that. This is the birthday.
In front of your lips, going.
Well, yeah, you're using your finger in there. Does Aykroyd? I don't know. Maybe he.
Doubtful.
Yeah, he probably does. Let's see. Here again, old man alert. Sean Kingston, American Jamaican singer songwriter, born on this day in 1990. Making him 33 years old. And I did see that he had a collaboration with Justin Bieber, but otherwise that might be the extent of my knowledge of the oeuvre of Sean Kingston. So nobody else is rushing in to fill the void, so I'm going to move on. On this day in 1997, David Bowie releases Earthling, his 21st studio album, including here's a little snippet from I'm Afraid of Americans. And one more musical note from this day in 2001, we had this catchy little ditty by Shaggy.
Yes. How could I forget that I had given her an extra key? All this time she
was standing there, she never took her eyes off me. Oh, you can go on access to your villa. Here's what I didn't know before. The song is actually based on an Eddie Murphy bit about what to do if you're caught cheating. It's just to say it wasn't me. I mean, Carolyn, that's right in our political bailiwick. How many politicians have been like, oh, no, that's not what you... Are you going to believe me or are you going to believe your lying eyes?
Lying eyes, yeah. No, that's perfect. That happens these days, it feels like.
Yes. Yeah, but again, catchy and a message for everybody. Don't do what politicians and singers tell you to do, because we should expect better of ourselves. We're going to hold you over and talk to you in the next segment. But in the 30 seconds or so we got left, you want to give a little preview? Is there a theme this week in the State House Action newsletter?
I mean, a little bit, but not really. I mean, yesterday was Groundhog Day, so you know nothing. So I go back and revisit some stuff I discussed earlier in newsletters, like the Ohio House Speaker debacle. There's that situation is still going on, and there's infighting among the Republicans and the majority in the Ohio House, and they're arguing over who controls the credit card for the campaign account.
More proof that we are not the most dysfunctional state. We're just right up there. Carolyn Fiddler will join us again at the top of the next hour here on Up North News Radio. Wasn't me. Saw me kissing on the sofa. Wasn't me. I even